Oh my goodness, opening day is almost here tomorrow. As a matter of fact, Thursday, March 30th, opening day. I cannot wait for that. And nothing goes better with opening day than an ice cold beer. And nobody makes ice cold beer better than our friends at Left Field Brewery. And just because they're so nice to us and you're so nice to us, we want to be nice to you. We got a promo code over there at Left Field Brewery. You can get a free can koozie with a minimum order of $55 in the fan shop over at leftfieldbrewery.ca. That's valid while supplies last throughout the Blue Jays season. That is pretty darn exciting to us. You know, ice cold beer, 100% Ontario ale, crisp, refreshing, made for baseball. But wait, there's more. They've also introduced just this week ice cold lime, just a limited edition fruited version of that ice cold beer, a hint of lime juice. That'll get you going when it comes to watching some regular season baseball. Cannot wait for that. You can find that at the LCBO, at the brewery, or at home delivery through the fan shop. And like I said, if you go through the fan shop, throw in promo code less than Jays, all one word, no cap, and get yourself a free can koozie. It lets them know that we sent you because they're nice to us when we want to be nice to them, and you're nice to us and you're nice to them and everyone's nice to everybody. That's what baseball is all about. While supplies last, for that free can koozie, promo code less than Jays, fanshop.leftfieldbrewery.ca. Yes, hello and welcome for the final preseason edition of Less Than Jays. We've made it.
This is it.
We made it through the long hard winter. Does it feel good?
We did it. You know what? It does. It's like, I know, I think I said last week it doesn't really feel like we're there. I don't know why, but it doesn't. And yet today I was getting ready to watch this afternoon's game, which was not on television. And I realized that yesterday, watching the game, I had finished watching spring training, which was very, very nice.
Isn't it?
I enjoyed that immensely.
And, knock on wood, I guess we have to because it's over, a zero-injury spring training, which is like the only thing you can really hope for. You can hope for something like Kikuchi to happen, but zero injuries is really what you're going for, and the Jays pulled it off, so that's
truly
good too.
Truly, like, yeah, truly a boring spring, which is exactly what you want, as we've said before.
It is, and I tried with all my might, Jake. You know me, the fringes of the roster is where I usually get my rocks off, but I tried with all my might to care about Nathan Lukes and Otto Lopez, and couldn't do it. Just couldn't bring myself to be like, oh man, I can't believe they didn't take Otto Lopez. I tried. I really did.
Yeah, not to get to spoil later on in the show, but in my notes, and yes, we made notes today.
Notes.
My notes for Nathan Lukes is literally just good for him, because I also have...
Imagine feeling a different way about that. Yes, lots to get to today. We have the 26-man roster. They didn't do the official graphic, but our good friend Ben Nicholson-Smith over at Sportsnet did get... He basically got the, like... There was only two things that John Schneider could even tell, like, anybody to say who made the team that was a question. One of them was Zach Pop. One of them was Nathan Lukes. Literally every other position is spoken for. I guess he also mentioned that Kikuchi made their starting rotation. But that gives us a 26-man roster. So we're gonna go. I tasked you with one statement on every single member of the roster. And then we're going to do some bold predictions. And then it's time to get ready for the regular season. So it's just that simple today.
I love it.
So we'll start. Let's start with our 26-man roster. I'll quickly tell you who is on it, and then we will start. We'll start one by one going through it. Catchers, Jansen and Kirk. Infielders, Guerrero, Belt, Espinal, Bichette, Chapman. Outfielders, Springer, Varsho, Kiermaier. Lukes, utility players, Merrifield and Biggio. Starting pitchers, Manoah, Gausman, Bassett, Berríos, and Kikuchi. Your relievers, Romano, Garcia, Swanson, Meza, Bass, Simber, and Pop. What position group would you like to start with, Jake?
You know, why don't we just go in order? Let's start from number, I guess, two on the field, and then go through there and then to the ones.
So I challenged you, just one quick statement on every single player on the team. If we did a minute on every player, it would take us half an hour. So I think that's about perfect. We start with the man who led the team at OPS last year. Jake, one statement on Danny Jansen.
Danny Jansen is the best catcher on the team. And he has, I think, if he can stay healthy, which with Danny Jansen is, you know, that's a big if.
It's the biggest knock at this moment.
That is a theme that will come up a couple times in these statements. I think he's primed for like a... I don't think anyone's really like underrating Danny Jansen, but I think he's still going to surprise a lot of people. If he stays healthy, I think he's going to have a massive year.
Danny Jansen, 2023 American League All-Star, is manifesting that. I think Caitlin McGrath put that in her bold predictions. I almost hate that I used bold predictions in the second half of the show, because everybody's bold predictions is everybody's blog post, their listicle post this year. We can lay our swords down on the who's the best catcher. That was my, like, going through the 40 and 30. I was like, the war is over. Jansen and Kirk won. We don't need to do this. I'm a huge Danny Jansen guy, as people may know. I think he brings a lot of things. A great bat, a great ambush hitter, a great fastball hitter, a guy that can really... when he makes contact, makes a ton of hard contact, and is a good defensive catcher. I know the way he catches at the bottom of the zone upsets some people, but not me. Good arm, good with the rotation, seems to go out and have conversations at the right time, seems to keep things calm, seems to keep a lid on things. I'm very, very happy with Danny Jansen behind the plate for big stretches of this year. Interesting to see how the split goes, but I'm happy to see Danny Jansen remain a part of the core of this squad, because we didn't really know who was going to be staying and who would be going behind the plate, and Jansen is staying. Player number two, Jake, Alejandro Kirk. I'll go first this time. Alejandro Kirk, I thought Drew Fairservice did a great job talking about the Alejandro Kirk thing, where you can... I think Bichette is sort of spiritually similar, where, like, you can have your qualms and you can have your questions and you can say, is he going to be a catcher long term? Is he going to be this? Is he going to be that? But the reality is, right now, he is a good player. And in this moment, he is a good player and a real bonus to have on this team. Jansen is sort of the, like, a team in this spot, as good as the Jays are, having Jansen is like normal, if you know what I mean, where it's like you have a very good young catcher, you developed him, you got him. It's normal. Alejandro Kirk is not normal. It's not normal to have a guy his size in the major leagues. It's not normal to have a guy with his hitting profile behind the plate. It's not normal to have two catchers this good at hitting. It's a real surplus. It's a real boon. It's a real feather in their cap and real advantage that they're going to have against most teams basically every game. A lot of teams don't have one good hitting catcher. They have two. So Alejandro Kirk is like a bonus, and I think he is somebody that we can celebrate again this year versus, like, the constant battling about which catcher would stay and which catcher would go and who should be starting. I'm ready to just celebrate Alejandro Kirk this year.
Okay. I am also ready to celebrate Kirk.
You're the that Japanese soldier in the deep in the forest. World War II has been over for years.
No, it's just that I am Kirk might, my statement is Kirk is the player I am the most nervous about.
Interesting.
This year. Not because I think he's bad by any means. I think everything you said is true, but I don't know, it's kind of felt since like mid last season that major regression was coming for him, and it caught up with him a little bit in the second half of last year. And I just, you know, I'm curious to see how much I trust him doing what he did in the first half of last year again. I think, oddly enough, back to Jansen, I think Jansen staying healthy is actually huge for this, because if Jansen can stay healthy and catch a lot more games than he did last year, you keep Kirk's legs healthier, you keep him not having to, you know, catching 6 days a week, which just keeps everything a little fresher. And if they can be a true healthy tandem, I think it only benefits both of them. But yes. I'm very nervous about Alejandro Kirk. I won't lie. I don't want to be.
Yeah, no, I get it. I get it. I'm deep down in my heart of hearts, I'm with you. The power comes and goes, but the contract rate, I'm saying to myself, the contract rate has never wavered. He's always had elite bat to ball skill, which is
and apparently his batted ball velocity or whatever, I think, is like the best in the league over the last 3 years. So it's not like he's a slump. It's like he's a slouch by any means. But just a little nervous.
I get it. We moved to the number three. We moved over to first base. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., a bit of a under the radar kind of guy. Jake, go first on your Vladimir Guerrero Jr. statement.
Vladimir Guerrero. I mean, okay, I have two Vladdy takes. One of them I'll save for bold predictions. The other one is also a bold prediction, but it's not my bold prediction. Vlad Guerrero will be an MVP finalist this year.
I like that. League.
Top I like three. I think Vladdy's going to... I think, you know, not to play armchair psychologist or anything, but he talked a big game last year, and I don't want to say didn't back it up, because not backing up for Vlad is still like an elite hitter. But you know, he regressed a little bit. There's no denying that he wasn't as good as we thought and hoped he was going to be. I think he's going to take the leap this year. I think we're going to see... I think it's going to be one of those things where it's a joy to go to the ballpark just to watch Vlad hit this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard as a Blue Jays podcast to not spend the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. talk being like he's going to be amazing. But
if we don't, what's the point? We might as well just say they're not making the playoffs. If we're like, oh, Vlad's going to be bad. Like it's.
But yeah, my sort of thoughts on Vlad, I mean, obviously, listen, he's superfluously talented. He's like once in a lifetime. The ease with which he hits for power is awe-inspiring. I'm in on the I don't call it a bounce back. You don't want to call it a because again, he was very good last year. I think basically my thoughts on Vlad is it's built around him. The everything else, every other piece on this team is built with the thought of how does it complement Vladimir Guerrero Jr. hitting second, third. The whole thing, Springer at the top of the lineup, Bichette aggressive how he is, Belt coming in, the catching tandem, the outfield, every piece of this team is built around how do we maximize Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s prime. And this year is, to me, you talked about it last he. Talked quite a big game last year. This year, to me, is the first year that the pressure is really on him. Mm-hmm. It was on him last year at times, but I think pressure's really on Vlad this year, and the whole thing is built around him. So excited to see how that plays out.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's going to respond to that pressure, I guess is my point.
For sure. Built for this. Up next, Brandon Belt, left-handed first baseman, play for the Giants. I will tell you, Brandon Belt, I'm excited about the extracurriculars with Brandon Belt. I know, obviously, if he hits like he hit in 2021, that is unbelievable found money, like the shrewdest move they could possibly make. I'm interested to see what kind of impact he can have on these young, aggressive, very good hitters that they have the team built around, Vlad and Bo, these important guys, even a guy like Cavan, who sort of has a similar approach to Brandon Belt when he was a little bit younger, a guy that really knows how to control at-bats, knows how to get himself in situations where he gets pitches that he can do damage with. That's really where he has excelled. As long as he has something left in the tank, my only concern is what's left in the tank. But I think, as terms of a mentor and a guy who shows the way, excited about what Brandon Belt brings to the bench this year.
You and I have said in years past, and by years past I mean the last 2 years, we have said on multiple occasions that when Lourdes Gurriel was hitting, he was the straw that stirs the drink.
Yes.
Or no, that was Springer. Sorry. Gurriel's the guy who makes the whole thing work.
You were right the first way.
Was I right the first way?
Yeah. Okay.
Well, regardless, I think Brandon Belt is the new guy who straw that stirs the drink. If he is, not even if he's as good as he was in 2021, if he's like 80% as good as he was in 2021, this roster looks completely different, or this lineup looks completely different. On the flip side, if he's not good, which, as we said last week, I feel is kind of a 50-50 chance. If he's not good, suddenly this roster's got a bunch of offensive holes.
Mm.
So I think he's really like kind of under the radar, a linchpin of the offense this year. And I feel pretty good about him. Like, he looked good enough in spring. You know, it's hard to judge, but he OPS'd over 800. He didn't seem to have any lingering effects of the injury. So, you know, I'm optimistic about him, but I think he's going to be a very, very important member of the team. Maybe not in like a full like production kind of way, but I think if he's not good, they're in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair. Jake, I ask you this. Your thoughts on Santiago Espinal this year?
Espinal's kind of in a weird spot. The two notes I have for Espinal are he's probably the best second baseman on the team, and he's also probably the biggest trade bait on the team at the same time. I think it's kind of interesting how last year preseason the story was all about him and all about how he had bulked up and put on all this muscle and was ready to be the second baseman for this playoff team going forward. And this year, I feel like he's just kind of been Santiago Espinal.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe that's all he needs to be on this team. Like, as I was just saying about Belt, if Belt is good, it patches up a lot of holes, and Espinal just has to be, like, above average to make this work. But I feel like with Espinal, you know what you're going to get at this point. Like, I don't think there's anything he can do that's going to strictly disappoint us. But I do think we're going to see a lot of him. And another guy who started the year really hot last year, and if he can tap into that a little bit this year, that'll be really interesting. Although, like I said, he may not be on the roster come August.
Yeah, my note for Santiago Espinal is it seems like he's constantly in competition for his role. It seems like every one of the last 3 years, it's been like he is stealing the role from Biggio at third, he steals the role from Biggio at second, but then he kind of cools off and they go and get Merrifield, and now he's entering this year. I think you nailed it there. This preseason, this spring training, I have heard a ton of people talking about Whit Merrifield as a bounce-back candidate. I have heard a ton of people talking about, hey, we should be higher on Kevin Biggio. Nobody is talking about Santiago Espinal other than the fact that it looks like he's slotted in to be the opening day second baseman. Very interesting to see, because the very important, not important, but important thing that I'm going to look at this year is like who's playing the most games at second base. It could literally go any way. Any of the three of them could end up playing the most games. It could end up being like a, I don't know, what's 162 divided by 3, Jake? Do you have any idea? I don't have
a clue. Like 7. 60-something?
60-something, yeah. They could all play 60-something. I really don't know. 59-point-something. Yeah, something like that. It's 50-something, right? Because 15.
It's 59-point-something, I think.
There you go. So yeah, they could all play 60-ish. Obviously, there's going to be some outfield stuff. I'm just really interested to see how second base breaks down, because also, you mentioned the trade bait thing. One thing they do have on the 40-man is they have Otto Lopez, who can play middle infield as well as outfield, and they have Leo Jimenez, who is probably not ready to play Major League right now, but is basically a Santiago Espinal package clone. So, yeah, it is interesting that he's sort of the superfluous skill set, but also played really well last year out of the gate and made the All-Star team. So we shall see sort of how that breaks down for him. An interesting year for him in terms of competition and where he fits in with how deep the infield on this team has become. Oh boy, it's time for the lightning rod. It's time to talk about Bo Bichette. I will say I did just do the Bo Bichette 40 and 30 today. So I'm fresh on my Bo Bichette rolling take. And I will say, Jake, I'm going to do my best to do this year. I'm gonna do my goddamnedest, because I know it can be. He can be a guy that makes you shake your head. He can be a guy that that makes you throw your hands up. He can also be a guy that blows you away with how good he is being, similar to Kirk, but even stronger. I am trying to remember to celebrate Bo Bichette this year, because 4.5, 5-win shortstops at age 25 do not fall out of the sky. You can look back at the history of this franchise. How many shortstops in your life have been 4.5 to 5-win players? The answer is none of them. None of them. None of them have really come close. Maybe prime Tony Fernandez. And I know he does things that are annoying. Getting thrown out at third, running from second, blows my mind. Some of the plays at shortstop, really frustrating. Some of the non-competitive at-bats, really frustrating. But, man, guys like this just don't come along. And if he is able to match up what his second halves have been with just being good in the first half, I mean, he's a guy that the sky really is the limit. I think he is, 25 years old only, aging into his early prime. I think sneaky candidate to have a really special year is Bo Bichette.
Yeah, I have for Bo, one way or the other, this is the last year of the Bo question, I think. Like the sort of exactly the conversation, the narrative, the doubts, the praising. I think one way, whether it's good or bad, after this season, that answer as to what exactly he is will be clear. And I'm hopeful that it's, a $330 million shortstop.
Yeah. It's so funny. I was looking back at sort of his numbers, and he is a guy that like is almost a victim of the time that he plays in. Like if he was playing in the early 2000s before we got on to the like OBP is so important and these defensive metrics.
Oh, if he was just getting hits?
If he was just hitting 325 home runs every year and playing shortstop, you'd be like, oh, he's like Derek Jeter, basically. Like this is, it's just so funny that the things that we know and the levels we can get to, you're able to pick apart a guy like Bo Bichette, when in reality, it's like, he plays really hard. He really wants to win. He's a really competitive guy. He gets really high and really low. He's fiery. Everything is visible. The flaws and the positives are really visible. He's a really easy to read guy. And I think that works against him sometimes. But again, 5-win shortstops at age 25, it just doesn't, they just don't get gifted to you like this. So
yeah,
trying to appreciate it. Moving on, it's time to talk about Matt Chapman.
I just have that meme from The Boys of the guy saying perfect is what I have for Matt Chapman. Also, Matt Chapman is going to get paid.
I think of when I think of memes going from Bichette to Chapman, I think of the Gordon Ramsay one where it's like, you donkey. And then the one's like, oh, beautiful, come here. It's like Matt Chapman struck out a ton last year. Matt Chapman had stretches.
Yeah, but that defense.
I know. Exactly right.
Fundamentals.
Just sort of, and he's even keel. It's one level the entire way. I think
he's
it's
got
so
a terrible
funny.
Mustache. He's perfect.
Listen, I love Matt Chapman. It's built in a lab for a guy that I absolutely adore. You look forward to hard hit balls to third base, which is like insanity. It's like the scariest thing that could happen. And just like, I can't wait for guys to hit line drives to the left side of the infield. A true joy. Another guy, we could go through this, and every single guy we're like could have a pretty big year. It does. Like Matt Chapman doesn't have to change that much to be a really dangerous part of the middle of this order. It's like, if he drops the strikeout rate by like 2%, you're like, God damn, this dude is crazy good. So very into Matt Chapman at third base. And it continues to be like blown away that they even made that deal in spring last year.
Yeah, and I saw they released, I know it was for the Matt Olson deal, but they released Canna yesterday, which is quite something.
Move into the outfield. Let's talk about George Springer, your starting right fielder. I will say,
Pacha, not Canna. It's not a person.
Canna.
Pash. Christian Pash.
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah.
No, he's bad. It's just he was supposed to be good.
And right.
That offseason.
Yeah. In Chad Pendergren released too.
Not important.
True. George Springer time. I will say, man, sometimes it's almost easy to forget how fucking crazy good George Springer is. Like, he's insanely good.
Yeah.
You look at the numbers and you're like, man, he's insanely good. Like, well, every year of his career, he's been really fucking good.
I think the thing with Springer as a Blue Jay is, I mean, the first year it was sort of, he was hurt for the first half, and then there was all the playing in fucking Dunedin and then Buffalo, and then when he finally got back and the team finally came together, he was amazing. And it was like, oh my God, he's going to be, he's why we spent $150 million. He's incredible. And then last year, the whole year, he was clearly a broken person. And then, of course, like the season ending on just like watching his body deteriorate. Like I in game two against Seattle, when he, even before Bo concussed him, like he caught that ball and slammed into the wall and was like, well, he's out forever.
Yeah.
Like he comes up holding his wrist. It's just, I feel like that all of that and all of the narratives around him has overshadowed how good George Springer is when he's healthy.
The idea of him getting to play extended periods at 100%, or them being in a situation where, like, he can, if he gets hurt, he can rest up. Like, I think he had to rush back last year because they didn't have a center fielder when he was out. Like, they really had they had zero at center field. Not that I expect him or hope that he's hurt and they can fill it, but like, it's really enticing to look at the way that he destroys fastballs and the way that he is like the absolute fire starter at the top of this lineup. It's intoxicating. Next one, the rest of the outfielders are left-handed. That's crazy. Dalton Varsho, new and exciting.
I just can't get excited about him, and I don't know why.
You're struggling with Dalton Varsho. Somebody else pointed out to me. They were like, Jason seemed like Jake likes Dalton Varsho very much.
It's not that I don't like him. I'm just not sold on him yet. I feel like I need to see him hit more home runs. Because like I know the defense is going to be there. Like, that's not a concern. But like, you know, I know he hit 27 last year. And he's a young guy. He's only got like two full seasons, I think, behind him. Yeah, not even. He played 95 games in 2021. He's played one full season in his career. I need him to raise that OPS by like 50.
Ooh, it's possible.
It is. And especially in a friendly park, you know, left-handed bat with the new short porch at Rogers Center. I don't know. There's something about him that I'm not sold on yet.
I'm interested to see how the conversation around him forms this year, because to me, he's going to be sort of the exact opposite of Gurriel, where it's like all the little things done right. And maybe not the big moments. Like, you might not, to your point, it's like, I can see people getting on him because he will come up and it'll, and the slash line will, at some point will be like 210, 280 something. And you're just like, it's like the OBP is too low right now. And no matter what you're doing on the other end, it's not satisfying us. But I think the defense, the base running, the little stuff, I think that's going to be the calling card. I am higher on Varsho, I think, than you are. I think especially the ability to back up and play center field is going to be very much in handy. And again, it's not going to take a huge, huge, huge improvement to some of his numbers for him to be like crazy, crazy valuable. So I'm voting strongly pro Varsho right now.
I hope so. Like, I want to be, like, he's the big trade this year. I want to be on board, but I don't know. I'm just not that high on him yet.
Reserve your right. Speaking of not being that high on a guy, but maybe changing your mind, it's Kevin Kiermaier time, Jake.
Sadly, begrudgingly, I'm sold.
Now
I have to admit, it didn't take much.
Now, I will admit, I must wonder, because Dalton Varsho is a better hitter than Kevin Kiermaier.
Unquestionably.
And yet,
I think he like could be like under, not actually the team MVP, but like the underrated team MVP if he stays healthy, which huge if. I think he's another candidate for the guy who makes it all click.
Yeah.
Because, like, he's bad as a hitter. But if he can just be okay as a hitter, it's huge.
Yeah, almost like his goal, I feel like the Kevin Kiermaier goal this year is to, like, just not even be noticeable on offense. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Just like,
absolutely.
Almost reminds me of, like, a stay-at-home defenseman in hockey where you're, like, a great game is you really never notice him, right? Is it just, like, a great game is he makes four really nice plays that he makes look routine, and you're like, oh, yep, fly ball to center field, that's an out, without even thinking about it, and, like, just isn't a total disaster at the plate, and I think going to win over some hearts and minds. People love a great center fielder. It's easy to get behind.
Yeah, and I think, you know, to your point about not being noticed on offense, like, I was going to say for better or for worse. For worse, we noticed a lot of Raimel Tapia and Bradley Zimmer last year. That, yes. Like, he has to be not that. Like, he doesn't even have to be good.
Congrats to Raimel Tapia making the Red Sox opening day roster, by the way. finally, last outfielder, Nathan Lukes. I gotta say, good for him.
I'm gonna echo that. Yeah,
nice to see a guy at 28 getting his chance to make his major league debut.
I will say, I am glad that they gave the spot to another outfielder.
Yes, lefty, a guy you are just good, like passably good at everything, right? Good base runner, good outfielder, plays all three positions. Decent power, decent on base, like really a guy that you're hoping doesn't take anything away. You're looking for, yeah, that's fine. Sort of like the reaction you're looking for when Nathan Lukes is playing every day. I think you're
I think you're not looking for him. You don't want him to play every day is what I would
correct.
Say.
Yeah. That's better said. But like versus like a Bradley Zimmer, who we're already saying his name too many times this episode, but like where you can be like, okay, he has these really strong pluses and he has these really strong negatives. I think Lukes is the opposite of that, where it's like passable wherever you're going to put him.
Yeah.
We move into two guys that Ben has labeled utility. The first one is Whit Merrifield. I am buying, I'll tell you this, I'll get into this before you get yours. I'm buying two-hit Whit resurgence this year. I think a bit of a prick, a bit of a jerk. I don't know that he was super happy last year. I thought he was like a guy that sort of playing out the string in KC on a bad team and didn't love the negative attention that came before you know he was able to even establish himself in Toronto. I think a time off to refocus, re-energize, have competition for his role no matter what. Like, he's a guy that played every day, like legitimately every day for KC for several years. And now he's going to have to compete to play in second base. He's going to have to compete to be the fourth outfielder. I think it's good for him. I think he's going to be fired up and ready to sort of show like the Kevin Biggios and the Santiago Espinals saying, oh yeah, like this is how a top end guy in this position behaves and plays. I don't know.
Yeah, my note for Whit is that a lot of white Blue Jay fans are going to really like him. I think he's good. And I mean that as a compliment to what I think he's going to do this year. But
you did not mean that as a compliment.
No, I guess I didn't. He's a liar. The Blue Jays face of the convoy. No, I think I agree with you that he is going to be a good... I think he's going to be good this year. I think he's going to be an important part of the team. I was able, despite myself, to get over it and root for him last year. I'll do the same this year, begrudgingly. But I do think he's going to have a good year. I think we're going to see a lot of him this
year.
Yes,
I do too. As long as he plays well against the Rays again. That was like the only thing he did last year. And we were like, that's enough for me. Play good against the Rays and you're in. And finally, your last position player, old reliable, it's Kevin Biggio at the bottom of the 13 men.
I am once again ready to be Kevin pilled by one good at bat.
Kevin pilled positively this time.
Yeah, one good at bat with some plate vision. I'm back in. Why not at this point? We're all pot committed to Kevin Biggio at this point. Also, I think outfielder Kevin Biggio is going to be a real thing this year. You said you were interested to see the second base split between the three. I don't think you're going to see Kevin a lot there this year.
he's talking the talk like he wants to be a right fielder. That was sort of the preseason buzz, was like he's prepared to play a lot of outfield. I think because Teoscar was around last year, I was like deeply offended when Kevin Biggio was playing right field. I was like, you can't have a guy who can't do any of the things. He has to be able to do one of the things that a prototypical right fielder does. I don't know if George Springer being that guy now is going to make that better or worse, because George Springer to me is the exactly what a right fielder should be. But I mean, with like you, I am ready to let Kevin Biggio back into my heart. I'm ready to say that there's use for a Kevin Biggio here, a guy that will go anywhere, will do anything, and do it with a good attitude and be a leader. Although I might argue with you that he might be bigger trade bait than Santiago Espinal now that we're here. Okay, we'll take a quick break and then we'll go through the pitchers after this. If you're watching on opening day on Thursday, and let's be honest, you are going to be if you're listening to this podcast, here's something fun you can do. You can play First Pitch Bingo along with our friends over at Left Field Brewery. That's on March 30th. It's a contest they are running for the first couple weeks of the season. They got a bingo card that you can fill out virtually or IRL at the Tap Room and Bottle Shop at 36 Wagstaff Drive in Leslieville in Toronto. It's a fun little bingo card with stuff like the pitch clock running out, home plate lady being sighted, Bo flipping his hair. You can play and post on your social. You have a chance to win one of four First Pitch prize packs valued at $150. It includes beer, merch, apparel, fan club points, and game tickets. That is pretty sweet. Check it out over on the Left Field Brewery social media, or on ours. We're going to share it over at Less Than Jays. First Pitch Bingo. Check it out opening day on Thursday, March 30th. Jake, it's pitcher time. Let's start at the top of the rotation. Did you know they were calling him the Big Puma? They just started calling him the Big Puma. And I
saw that, yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's Big Puma now. Interesting.
I guess that's fine.
Yeah, I'm not up to. They don't ask 37-year-old bald guys what their nickname should be anymore.
They used to. I'm so close to leaving my nuts and gum era.
It's something like, on this side.
I got 6 months left in nuts and gum.
So, in the demographic, and then it's like, do whatever you want, nobody cares. Alek Manoah, top of the heap. What is your snap judgment on Alek Manoah?
Basically everything I said about Alejandro Kirk, but the opposite. I have no fear of regression with Manoah. I think he's a legit ace. I think he will be a Cy Young finalist again. And I think he brings a certain amount of fuck you that this team is sorely lacking. And I think Witt brings that as well, and Simber has that in the pen. But I think, you know, what more can we possibly say to sing Alek Manoah's praises? I think he's the ace. He's the legit locked on opening day number one, and he should be.
Yes, the word that comes to mind for me for Alek Manoah is makeup, it's very much like if you were drawing out like what does an ace look like in terms of the way that they just not even the pitches, not even the stuff, not even the repertoire. How does an ace carry himself?
Yeah.
It's Alek Manoah, wants to be in Yankee Stadium in October, wants to face the number four hitter and blow him away, wants to finish the games, wants to throw nine, wants to strike everybody out, wants to start fights, loves to bean guys, would love it if you talk shit back to him. I think he has that in such spades, and I think you're right that the team could use a little more Alek Manoah in their lives, sort of, especially with the way the pitching staff really got energized from him last year, mm-hmm. of like, You had Ryu, who's by all accounts a great guy, but is sort of quiet and goes about his business. You had Barrios, who was like really on the rocks. You had Kikuchi, who was really uncertain. Manoah was just like such a force, really important guy to have, and really, really like what a gem, what a diamond. Can't say enough good things about him. Number two, or 1A, 1B, it's Kevin Gausman. And I will say, not to leak my bold predictions, I am very...
My bold prediction is also about Kevin Gausman.
I think we might have the same one.
It's possible, yeah.
No pun intended, very high on Kevin Gausman this year. listen, I've talked before about how like pitching a lot of times doesn't make a ton of sense to me, whereas like even Alek Manoah, like you can look at Alek Manoah's page and not really know what exactly it is that's making him so good, right? It's like the velocity doesn't jump off the page, the movement stuff isn't like jump off the page, but he just goes out and attacks guys. Kevin Gausman's sort of the exact opposite. I can see it happening in front of my face. You can't hit the splitter. The splitter is stupid good. His stuff is like really enjoyable and simple for me to watch and digest. I thought he was sneakily really great last year. I think this year, sort of with the amount of luck that he ran into last year and how good the outfield is this year, I think Kevin Gausman's it due for a really good season.
Yeah. Again, not to spoil my bold prediction, but I have very high hopes for Gausman this year.
That's good.
I'm, you know, it's, I think having the two of them, Manoah and Gausman, as you said, how Manoah sort of brought a good energy to the rotation last year. I think having the two of, not that Gausman wasn't great last year, but I think now, as you say, with the outfield, some better defense, I think with the two of them, it's going to really settle everything down with the team. Because, you know, Gausman was great last year, but it kind of still felt in some of the more panic moments like, boy, just get to Manoah's start.
Mm-hmm.
I think this year we get two of those, which is wonderful.
So then we move into some a little lesser knowns. Number three in the rotation right now, penciled in, the prototypical number three, I would say, is Chris Bassett. What's your temperature right now on Chris Bassett?
My note for Chris Bassett says, I can't tell if I have low expectations of him because he's just like as you say, he's the prototypical number three and it's like hard to get, you know, thrilled about it, or if it's because he's a big Blue Lives Matter guy. But, I think it's probably the latter, but I'm not sure. I hope he stops tweeting. I'll say that. Sure. But, yeah, I mean, like Bassett is here to be exactly what he is. And that's a good thing to have. They didn't have that last year, frankly. So, I mean, unless you want to argue Ross Stripling was that, which fair.
Yeah.
But yeah, exactly.
Well, you were I think the memory of Ross Stripling and the reality of how we all dealt with Ross Stripling are, it's like,
yeah.
We put like, oh man, the numbers. It's like, yeah, but we were always like, please just give us five innings. That was always the thought on Ross Stripling.
Yeah. I mean, I think Bassett is a guy that unquestionably makes the team better. Or the rotation better than they were last year. No questions asked. I just feel like he's a hard guy to get excited about because that's not really his job.
So there's some things, both good and bad, about Chris Bassett that I'm a little nervous. I'm a little more nervous about Chris Bassett than I expected. He's a little bit of a righty Ryu if you look at his mix. Throws eight pitches. Mm. You know, throwing eight pitches.
Does he really?
He's throwing eight pitches this spring.
Wow.
Savant has him at seven, and then he said he was experimenting. I can't remember what the new one is.
What do the circles say?
The circles have him as a pretty good pitcher. Like, it's sort of, again, the prototypical number three. Like, everything is good. Nothing is great. It's not a ton of strikeouts. It's sort of soft contact. It's very Ryu, where it's like he'll sort of throw anything to anybody in any count. I'm also sort of like, man, he's like, yeah, I think he's 34, turning 35.
Yeah.
Hasn't thrown 93 all spring. People tell me that he's a build-up guy and this is normal. I haven't seen it, so it's hard for me to be like, don't worry about Chris Bassett. I'm a little bit worried about Chris Bassett.
Yeah. No, I get it.
Speaking of being worried, it's time to talk about Jose Barrios. I'm watching through the fingers right now with Jose Barrios, and I know that's... Like eventually we have to get to a point where not every start is a referendum on him. I understand that as well. Because, like, you can look into the game logs last year and be like, he was actually pretty good as often as he was terrible. It's just the terrible ones are, like, one-inning starts, right? It's like he basically had 32 starts. Like, 8 of them were really good and 8 of them were really bad. Just the really bad ones were, like, 1 inning, 2 innings. Like, he wasn't getting anywhere in the bad ones. I want to believe because I don't really have any choice, but... I'm worried he's cooked.
Yeah, I don't believe. I'm going to say right now. I am hopeful, obviously, because like you said, we don't have any choice. Because like it or not, with that contract, we're stuck with him.
For sure.
So, you know, I am hopeful that now that it's not the first year after signing that contract and that he's not the opening day guy, I'm hopeful that maybe the focus on him is a little less. Because as you said, last year, every start was like, when is Barrios going to get it together?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm hopeful that maybe he can just be like the fourth starter this year. Like if he's terrible, then it's still not good. But at least, but maybe there's just a little less pressure on him. But I don't know. He didn't show much in the WBC to make me excited. He didn't show much in spring. Granted, it was limited to make me excited. I feel like an inning I watched him throw the other day is sort of what you're going to get with him. Against the Phillies the other day, he let up like 4 runs and struck out the side, which to me is like sort of everything he is in one like 20-minute package. But yeah, I don't know. I will say, now that he is the fourth starter, if he's anything close to good, it's like the rotation's unbelievable.
Right. If he's good, they're tough to beat. That's the fact.
But yeah, I don't know. I'll be very interested for the fourth game of the year. I'll put it that much.
Finally, your last starter. It's time to talk about the Cooch. You say Kikuchi time, baby. He's back and in Pog form.
I mean, how can you not be? Like, I know it's Yusei Kikuchi, and I know we've been sort of like, oh, it's spring training about him, but like, how can you not be high on him after spring training?
Like, yeah, I mean, yeah. You'd rather it go the way it went than not, right?
Right. Like, he had the most strikeouts in spring training. He had a 0.95 ERA, a whip of 1. He gave up no home runs. Like, it's... I'm not expecting him to have those kind of numbers over a full season. But if he can just be even a little bit that, as you say, Kikuchi, it's... you know, it's found money, even though they paid a lot of money. But you know what I mean.
There's a way this breaks out where, like, man, could be 5 great to pretty good starters. Truthfully.
Yeah.
I know we're hoping to pie in the sky here, but while we're here, it's spring training, it's time for it. It's like, wow, this could really work.
And you know what? I know that it was very easy to be really frustrated with him last year, but like, what a great, like, how can you not root for it?
Absolutely. Year?
Of course, the thing that sort of keeps me scared is that he's never been, like, good.
Yes.
Really? But, you know, who knows?
He also, yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And there is one where, like, there is the point of, like, they do have a bit of insurance if it doesn't go well, right?
That's, yes.
You can always call up Ricky T if you want to believe that sort of thing. Okay, we're into the relievers. Probably speed up a little bit on the relievers because I don't have as much to say about much of these guys. We'll go from the bottom up. Zach Pop. Got anything for Zach Pop?
Yeah, I was surprised that he was the last guy on to make the bullpen because he was sneaky very good for the Blue Jays last year.
He was.
I think he's going to be good again this year. I like Zach Pop, and I didn't think that he should have been the last man to make the pen this year.
Yeah, meat and potatoes is sort of how I, when I'm going through mm-hmm. it, is Zach Pop. Sinker slider, there's always been sinker slider relievers. That it's like the definition of what some relievers are. Easy peasy. I mean, on Zach Pop this year, I think shows the depth that he's your eighth reliever. And it looks like, to start at least, they're going no long man, which I think means that they believe in Kikuchi and they believe in the Barrios piece. So
yeah, I think, you know, I don't want Pop in high leverage, but I'm happy to see him in the sixth or seventh.
Yeah, I mean, again, you got eight guys. You got seven guys ahead. Yeah. That's pretty impressive. Trevor Richards, big sigh for me. You could argue like, oh, if he uses the changeup more and yada, 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 he has one elite pitch. At a certain point with some relievers, you get so far down the scar tissue that it's just like, less Trevor Richards is more for me, frankly.
Yeah, I was going to put this as a bold prediction, but then I thought it through, and I don't think it's that bold. So my note for Trevor Richards is that he won't be on the Major League roster by June.
Wow, that's big.
I think he's cooked.
Could be. Adam Simber is your next reliever. Man, he's sneakily been really good. Have you looked at the numbers? He's been crazy.
Adam Simber's awesome is the thing.
Amazed. Has there ever been a pitcher that has been this good and still yet you would like, there's no shot you would want him in a big spot? Like 2.8 ERA last year, 1.69 the year before that with the Blue Jays, and still, it's like, man, I need later than the seventh inning and I'm super nervous.
Yeah, I hope he throws less innings this year.
Yes, amen.
He threw 70 innings last year and crazy 71 talk. The year before. I feel like, again, as you're saying, with an 8-deep bullpen, you hope that that's the case. And hopefully that just makes him sort of what he was second half of 2021. Like, he appeared in 77 games last year.
Ludicrous.
72 the year before. Ludicrous. Between Miami and Toronto. So, you know, you hope he can take a little wear off that insane delivery and... I mean, I love Adam Simber. I think he's great, but I agree with you. I don't want to see him ever in an important spot.
That's every other day, 77 games. That's yeah, crazy.
He threw a lot last year.
Anthony Bass is up next. Maybe the reliever that I'm most worried about outside of Richards.
Really?
He's been really good, and maybe it's because he's a guy that we saw before, and he was like... good, but not crazy good. I look at, he's 35. It's one incredible year and then a bunch of pretty good years, right? Like, he was incredible last year. No questions asked. 73 strikeouts in 73 appearances. ERA of 1.5. Was good with the Jays. Was good with the Marlins. And then it's a bunch of years where he's like a 3.5 ERA guy. And then before that, he's like a 5-6 ERA guy. And listen, it happens. Relievers are fungible. But at 35, it's hard for me to believe. It's hard for me to be like, he's definitely a sub-2 ERA guy again this year.
Interesting. Yeah, I have in my notes that he's actually the guy I'm not worried about.
Really?
I think I have no notes for good. Anthony Bass. I think he is exactly like a perfectly okay relief pitcher.
Yeah. I mean, he was great last year. No questions asked. Tim Mayza, lefty. The only lefty in the bullpen.
My note is, please, God, find another lefty. I do not trust Tim Mayza at all. I didn't trust him last year. I don't know how we got into this situation where he's our, like, the lefty out of the pen, where we're like, oh, it's Tim Mayza. It'll be great. And then the wild card game happens. I do not trust him.
If I remember correctly, I don't think Anthony Bass was particularly great in the wild card game.
He was
not,
but he was a lot better. But he was a lot better in the regular season than Tim Mayza was.
Listen, he gets lefties out. There's no other way to explain any of it, and maybe that's less important than it ever was. But yeah, it's.
He's no Brett Cecil.
He is no. None of us are, and yet he's like completely transitioned. Like Cecil, Loop. Mayza, it's completely like straight line from one to the other.
It's an arcing line.
He certainly is a, like, another one of those guys where you just sort of look at it and you're like, yeah, he's getting results. I don't know.
What. Yeah, it made no sense last year, but sometimes I just don't trust pitching it. I don't trust it.
Just voodoo. I don't know how else to super explain it. Oh boy. Okay, Tim Mesa. It's Eric Swanson time, Jake. And we're gonna. My note is I'm gonna try not to hold Teoscar over his head this whole time.
It's yeah, my note is prove it was worth it. So.
So what, yeah. You will and I.
yeah.
Listen, all signs point to his numbers last year being absurdly good. I want to get that out and like it's you can chalk it up. It's one of those things where like when a guy suddenly becomes incredible, is there a thing you can point to and you can point to him learning? He actually credited, and they weren't even playing together. He credited Kevin Gausman with like Gausman turned his career around by going, my splitter is elite. I'm going to throw splitter until it stops working. He has done that out of the bullpen. It has worked to high regard. It just makes me nervous and sick to my stomach to think about. To be honest with you. Something about it doesn't add up. Something that the Seattle saw didn't add up to them, and I don't know what it is, and it drives me insane to think about.
I mean, yeah, you look at the numbers, and it's like you can't, as much as we love Teoscar, if we just zoom in as much as humanly possible, he's a guy who had 57 appearances and a whip under one. Like you can kind of see it.
And yet
he was never
appearances is like
never thrown in high leverage in the playoffs. Just
it's like 57 appearances is like fifth most out of the Seattle.
Yeah. I know. No, I know. But it's just, it's not a small sample size, I guess, is my point.
That's right. He pitched a ton and was great every time.
But, yeah, I don't know.
Makes me sick.
I don't know.
Two more to go. We got Jimmy Garcia throwing 98, the story of the World Baseball Classic for the Blue Jays.
I said earlier that I hope we can keep Simber's innings down. But this year, ditto double for Jimmy. I think he looks – I mean – I usually don't have a problem with seeing him come into the game. He was great last year. I can see him continuing to be great this year. He's 32 through 61 innings last year. Would love to see that down to like 55 or something.
Sure.
But that's nitpicking, I know. But yeah, I love Jimmy. How can you not?
I think I'm with it. I think keep him fresh is my thought on Jimmy. Because like he would have like short stretches last year where it's like, he doesn't have it right now, where it was just like the fastball would be like 2 miles an hour slower and the breaking stuff wouldn't be nearly as dynamic, and you go, shouldn't have gone to him. And it's hard to know until he comes into the game, but he's a guy when he's not fresh, it just looks like he's not quite the guy he could be. When he is fresh, man, he looks hard to hit, and he looked great in the spring. So buying some Jimmy stock. And finally, our last player, we arrive Markham's own Jordan Romano, your opening day closer. Jake, your Jordan Romano thoughts to close it out.
I'm so conflicted on Jordan Romano.
Really?
That I don't really trust him, but I also think he's going to be great, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Like, he's 2 years in a row now with just like awesome numbers. And so, you know, you were talking about like the Swanson thing where it's sort of he had one great year. Suddenly, whereas Romano has two now, and he was very good in the fake season in 2020 as well. So it's possible that Jordan Romano's just a good pitcher, and it feels weird. But yeah, I just don't, something about him, I just don't trust. He seems really volatile to me, but also you can't argue with results, and I don't think he's going to like regress that much, and I think he'll be totally fine.
Yeah, the fastball, whether he's throwing a ton of fastballs or a ton of sliders is like a really weird thing. You never really know which one it's going to be. He'll come into a game and only throw one of the pitches, and you're just like, I guess it's not a fastball day. And it's just like for 2 weeks, he'll barely throw his fastball, and you're like, I swear to God you throw like 98. Like, I know that you throw 98.
I hope he throws him more this year because he's one of the only guys in the pen that can do that. So
we were talking about him chasing down the saves record for the team last year. And it ended with 36.
We were. I mean, he started the first half of the year because the fucking starters couldn't finish a game, so.
There you go. There is your full roster rundown. We'll take a quick break and do our bold predictions before we head home after this. Jake, we've been rambling. We've been rambling.
We have.
That's what we do. We tried our best. We got every single player on the team. We each talked for a minute about every single player, and that gets you to 55 minutes. That's where we
Pretty
are.
Pretty quickly.
Anyway.
We'll save those mailbag questions.
Yeah. You know what? We will. I got something for the Patreon, but otherwise we'll save the mailbag questions. Jake, it's time to do bold predictions, three each, and I think one of them, I'm going to say my first one because I think you have the same one. Are you ready?
Okay, yeah.
My first bold prediction is Kevin Gausman will win the American League Cy Young.
Mine isn't exact the same, but more or less. Yeah, I said he's going to be the best starter on the team, and I also said that both him and Manoah will be up for the Cy, so, you know.
I am cribbing this.
Elimination. I think we're in the same. We're in agreement.
I snagged. I think Eno Saris from The Athletic predicted that as well. I know Eno was huge on Gausman all of last year, had him as the best stuff and best control in baseball midway through the year, and just sort of like he's just not getting the breaks. He was famously really pissed about the shift last year. Less shifting, a little more Kevin Kiermaier in center field, a little more Dalton Varsho on the other side, a fly ball guy. As long as it doesn't go out of the park, which was sort of his only real problem, I think Kevin Gausman's going to have a huge year, and I have him, if not winning the American League Cy Young, a high finalist for the American League Cy Young. I know that's bold, but so be it.
I like it.
Jake, what do you have for a bold prediction for the coming year?
I feel like a couple people have had this prediction today in all the columns. I know our friend Caitlin did, so I'm going to steal it because I'm a thief. Yep. I think Vladimir Guerrero is going to hit 50-plus home runs.
Oh, 50-plus.
Yes, I think there's going to be a fun week where we're going to get to all make jokes about Aaron Judge's record and how Vlad's coming for it. I don't think he's going to do that, but I think we're going to have a couple weeks of being able to make that joke.
I like that. Okay, my second bold prediction, Jake. You ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Ricky Tiedemann will make double-digit appearances this season.
Oh, I like that. I agree as well, but I like that.
I'm going to say appearances and not starts.
Yeah. Yep.
I see Ricky Tiedemann gets into 10 games this year is my bold prediction. I think June – when's the All-Star break? First week of July?
Something like that, yeah.
I think they get him in the week before the All-Star break, and they give him one start before the All-Star break to say, we're in the dog days. We need a spark. Let's get Ricky in.
The Manoah plan.
Yes, exactly right. Let's get Ricky in. We'll give us a spark going into All-Star break. And when we come out of the All-Star break, he is a part of this team, full stop. I think 10-plus appearances from Ricky Tiedemann is my bold prediction.
I like that.
Jake, your second bold prediction?
Well, it's my third because we...
Third, right.
We agreed with Gausman.
Sorry.
This is a two-parter. One is that Hyunjin Ryu will return to the rotation in July.
Very nice.
And the pitcher he bumps out of the rotation will not be Yusei Kikuchi.
Greasy.
I'm not sure who it's going to be, but it won't be Kikuchi.
I like that. I like the open-ended mystery of that one as well.
I mean, you can draw your own conclusions, but...
I like it. My final bold prediction, and say what you will, my bold prediction is quite simply... The Toronto Blue Jays will win the American League East, and will win it with it's not going to be a last day of the season clinch job. They're going to win it with a week, with like a couple days to spare. My gut is like they're going to win it like 4 or 5 games up is my prediction.
I hope so. Boy, I hope so.
I'm feeling like 95, 96 wins. Okay, Jake, before we go, I will quickly go through the reverse mailbags from last week. We had one from Mike Morris, best case, 100 wins, the whole rotation is good, everyone important stays healthy, Bo and Vlad put up career years. It's not that crazy. Like, it's not that crazy.
No, it's not.
When we were talking about it today, I was like, you know what? If Berríos is good, like, Berríos being good is almost like to me, takes them from like a 92 win team to like a 100 win team almost alone.
Yeah.
Worst case, 82 wins. Berríos, Kikuchi, and the bullpen all bad. Springer is injured most of the year. Vlad and Bo struggle. Yankees are good. I agree, Mike. That's not good. Okay. We got another one here. People are amazed that you. I can't believe you watched the highlights of the other crazy.
Yeah, that was a stupid thing to do.
Aoife's curve, reverse mailbag answer. Best case, 101 wins. Kikuchi and Berríos stable. Vlad 2021. Bo wins batting title. Varsho hits 35 home runs. Witt is good. Worst case, 86 wins. None of those things happen, and the Orioles are really good. The Orioles, sneaky, could be like ruiners here.
I don't think so.
I'm not buying it, but yeah.
I don't buy it.
And finally, Andrew Robertson, reverse mailbag. Best case, 100 wins. Vladdy triple crown. Worst case, injuries catch up with a bunch of these guys. 87 wins. Missed the wild card thanks to tiebreakers after going 7-6 against the Orioles and Rays. Don't put that.
That would really suck. I'd be really mad if that happened.
Interesting to say that nobody's worst case had them being under 500.
Well, we were saying that last week, right? Like, our worst case was they win 83 games.
Yeah. Jake, do you have anything for reverse mailbag, or shall we just...
Oh, boy.
I didn't prep you. There's no reason for you to have one ready. Unless you
no,
do.
No, I don't. No, I don't.
That's okay.
I'm trying to think of one quick. I'm trying to think of a prediction because it's baseball time. Okay. I'll keep it real simple. Two teams. World Series. Who you got?
Next week, let us know who you got in the World Series in 2023. We will read those out at the end of the show next week. If you want more show, if you want... profiles of all 40 players in the 40-man roster. You know where to go, patreon.com/lessthanjays. Send your reverse mailbag answers and your regular mailbag answers to @lessthanjays on Twitter or lessthanjays@gmail.com. We will read them on the air, the easiest airtime in all of Blue Jays audio. You say it, we play it. It's that simple. Thank you so much. Enjoy opening day on Thursday. I might hop on the Patreon and talk about it afterwards. Jake is on the road. I regrettably am not, but might overreact to opening day on there. You know where to find it, patreon.com/lessthanjays. Thank you, everybody, so much for being a part of this show. Cannot wait for the new season. We'll talk to you later.